Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I welcome you to GrandVision's second quarter and half year 2015 results analyst call and webcast. I am Theo Kieselboch, GrandVision's CEO, and I'm joined here by Paolo DiCastro, our CFO. In this call, I will start with the highlights of the first half and the second quarter of 2015. I will then give you some examples of how our strategic priorities are coming to action and how we are continuing to develop and deploy our global capabilities. After that, I will hand over to Paolo, who will run you through the segments and the total financial performance. Then we will, of course, be happy to open the floor to your questions. Let me start with the performance highlights of the half year 2015 on page three of the presentation. Overall, we've had a good first half 2015. Revenue growth was 15.5% at constant exchange rate. Organic growth was 6.5% and was primarily based on a comparable growth of 5.2%. This compares to 3.7% comparable growth for the same period last year. Acquisitions contributed 8.9% to the revenue growth. At the end of June, we had 5,871 stores worldwide, increasing from the 5,814 at the end of 2014. As usual, and in line with our strategy to continuously optimize our store network, the net increase of 57 stores also includes a number of store closings. Also, our profitability improved further. Adjusted EBITDA, which is the EBITDA excluding the impact of non-recurring items, was up by 17.2% to 259 million euro. This compares to 221 million last year. At constant exchange rates, the increase was 15.7%. The adjusted EBITDA margin increased by, I should say, only 4 basis points to 16.1% in the first half 2015. This is due to the effect that the acquisitions had, which were added at the end of last year. These acquisitions had diluted the underlying margin improvements that were realized in the G4 and Latin American Asia segments. Excluding this effect of the acquisitions, the adjusted EBITDA margin would have improved by 76 basis points to 16.8%. I'll now move on to page four and the second quarter of 2015. Total revenue grew by 15.3% at constant exchange rates. Organic growth was at 6%. Also in this quarter, the comparable growth of 4.8% contributed strongly to the organic growth. The second quarter adjusted EBITDA grew to 136 million. This is an increase of 18.1% over last year and 16% at constant exchange rates. Organic adjusted EBITDA growth contributed 9.6% and acquisitions 6.5% to this figure. The adjusted EBITDA margin in the second quarter increased by 15 basis points to 16.5%. It was at 16.3% in the second quarter of last year. I would now like to spend a moment on the comparable growth track record we have built, which you can see on slide five. As a reminder, we define comparable growth as the sales growth of those stores open for the complete 12 months of the previous year, in this case, 2014. Comparable growth is a very important factor in our business. It's the most sustainable and most profitable source of growth, as it also best leverages the existing operating cost base. In the second quarter of 2015, we achieved 4.8% comparable growth with a continued good performance in all three segments. The already positive comparable growth levels started to accelerate further since 2014, mainly for two reasons. First, we are achieving more consistency in the comparable growth across our countries. Next to harmonizing and strengthening our commercial proposition, we have also improved our global business intelligence capability, set up stronger internal controls, and consistent, nearly real-time and detailed KPIs. We now identify issues before they actually impact the performance and can address them proactively. This reduces the negative surprises we used to have popping up in previous years. Secondly, 2012 and 2013 were transformational years for GrandVision. During this period, we aligned our commercial proposition in all countries. We made sure that we are always positioned as the mass market player, providing high quality but affordable eye care. In this process, we sometimes reset price levels downward with a strong focus on volume growth. Of course, the performance on a quarter-by-quarter basis is also impacted by the timing of commercial campaigns, which varies by intention, and the level of the previous year comparators. I would now like to reiterate and confirm our strategic priorities. Grand Vision's vision is to provide high quality and at the same time affordable eye care to more and more people around the world. To achieve this, we have established a set of five strategic priorities. These are outlined on page 6 of your presentation. The first priority is the continuous strengthening and deployment of our global capabilities. Customer needs and the key drivers of the optical retail sector are very similar in most markets around the world. Based on this characteristic, we have developed, tested, and are internationally deploying a set of global capabilities which are targeted at better serving our customers in a differentiated way. Another set of global capabilities is targeted at developing group-wide synergies and leveraging skills, resources, and investments, and therefore also our cost base on a group level. The second priority is to always drive comparable growth. As mentioned before, this is the most sustainable and most profitable source of growth. It fully leverages our existing operating cost base. It also proves the strength of our retail banners and retail offering, including the growing importance of our own exclusive product brands in all categories. The third priority is the optimization of our existing store network. This includes targeted store openings, relocations, refurbishments, and also store closures when and where customer traffic patterns have changed. The continuous optimization supports both the revenue growth and the management of the operating costs. The fourth priority is to expand in current markets also through bolt-on acquisitions. The optical retail market is still highly fragmented. A high market share is still held by small chains and single or multi-store independent retailers. Grand Vision will continue to grow by acquiring and then integrating these. And finally, the fifth strategic priority is to enter new markets. We have a strong track record in this arena and plan to continue it, when and where the right opportunity presents itself. For example, in 2014, Grand Vision entered the Peruvian, Turkish, and Chinese markets and closed a large acquisition in Italy. While we're at any given time pursuing a range of potential opportunities, we have not announced any new market entrances or other material acquisitions in the first half of 2015. As mentioned, I would now like to give you some examples of how we are implementing our global capabilities and how they are supporting our strategic priorities. One of the major global capability projects we are working on is the implementation of a new global ERP system. This is a key building block towards one harmonized global IT platform, a strong business enabler and also a source of efficiency gains. Among others, it supports a globally integrated and proactive supply chain. This major global project was kicked off in 2014. We have just achieved our first milestone with a successful go-live of the new ERP system in the first four countries, Belgium, the Netherlands, the UK, and Ireland. Further international rollout will follow throughout the coming years. We target all countries to be fully operational in this global ERP system by the end of 2018. As outlined on page 8, this is part of our future IT landscape, which will bring significant future improvements to the local operations and to the group. It will empower our commercial operations for the benefit of our customers. It will standardize and better enable our global processes. It will further ensure quality on all levels, and it will simplify our IT infrastructure. Next to the global ERP system already mentioned, this future IT landscape also includes some other key elements. For example, a seamless omni-channel platform which introduces and integrates a broad range of technology, enhanced retail services and functionalities, in-store, on-the-go, and online. a global learning management system to provide the best training throughout the group in order to achieve outstanding customer service on all levels and in all stores. And IT shared service centers to provide secure and easy access to our global capabilities and latest business and technology innovations, as well as improve efficiency. A second example is described on page 8. The optimization and harmonization of our store layouts, design, and construction is another one of the global capabilities that has been deployed, tested, and is currently being deployed internationally. In the past, each country has designed its own store model, layout, and fittings independently. The standardization improves functionality and store-level operations. It reduces lead times before new openings and minimizes closing days when refurbishing or relocating. It reduces CAPEX and ongoing operating costs, and it allows for sufficient flexibility to adapt to local requirements and specifics. Our expansion in Mexico, as described on page 9, is a good example of how we are expanding into new markets enabled by these global capabilities. The opportunity in Mexico, with a population of more than 120 million and an expected annual average GDP growth of over 3% for the next 5 years, is big. According to a current study of the Mexican Optometrists Association, only approximately 30% of the people who require eye care are actually using it today. We acquired a first stake of our Mexican business in 2010, of which we now hold 70%. At that time, the business was operating 69 stores under the retail banner Opticas Lux. In the same year, we also acquired the sunglass specialty chain named Sunglass Island, operating 57 stores. In 2012, we introduced an additional mass market chain under the banner of Mass Vision. We grew the network in Mexico to a total of 155 stores by the end of 2012, 174 stores in 2013, and 191 stores in 2014. In the first half year of 2015, we further stepped up this pace and expanded to 208 stores. We expect further strong network expansion for the future. The fast expansion with a short profitability ramp-up phase is enabled by fully leveraging our global capabilities in terms of store opening process, store design, commercial proposition, assortment, supply chain training, IT, and so on. We believe that this Mexican example shows the power of the expansion model that we can replicate in other developing and growing markets. And with this, I would like to hand over to Paolo, who will now take you through some further details of our half-year and second quarter 2015 results.
Thank you, Theo. I will start with a segment review for the G4 on slide 11. The G4 segment had a strong first half of the year with total revenue growth of 10.8%, or as shown on the slide, 8% at constant exchange rate. This was driven by organic growth of 6.6%, and within that, a comparable growth of 5.8%. All four business units delivered strong results, with an especially good performance in Germany and Austria, which continued to see sales momentum following successful commercial activities. The Netherlands and the UK also displayed a solid performance during the first half. As for France and Belgium, comparable growth was below average in the first half of 2015, but saw improving trends at the end of the second quarter, especially with improving sunglass sales in France. Turning to the second quarter, revenue in the G4 grew by 9.5%, or as shown on the slide, 6.4% at constant exchange rate. Organic growth reached 5.4% and comparable growth was 4.8%. Adjusted EBITDA in the G4 segment increased by 14.4% to 207 million in the first half. The adjusted EBITDA margin increased by 66 basis points to 20.7%, benefiting from the continued implementation of the global capabilities as well as operating leverage. As for the second quarter, adjusted EBITDA grew by 12.4%, with the organic adjusted EBITDA growth reaching 8.8%. The adjusted EBITDA margin then increased by 54 basis points to reach 21%. Turning to slide 12, and as mentioned before, The strong performance of the G4 segment was in part driven by successful campaigns in Germany and Austria. Importantly, these campaigns not only resulted in higher top line and comparable growth, but also in faster EBITDA growth for the segment. How is this possible? Cost of sales and direct related expenses make about 26 to 27% of our revenue, while operating expenses, including overheads, are more than 60% of group revenue. Operating expenses include personnel costs in the stores as well as leases, and these are the two biggest cost items. Operating leverage is therefore a big opportunity. In summary, the successful execution of campaigns has had a significant positive impact on EBITDA margin improvements in the G4 segment this year, along, of course, with the continued rollout of our global capability. Turning now to slide 13, in the other Europe segment, half-year revenue increased by 20.4% to 433 million, or 21.5% at constant exchange rates as shown here. Organic revenue growth was 4.8%, while acquisitions, specifically the Randazzo acquisition in December of 2014, contributed 16.7% to revenue growth. After a slower start to the year with 1.4% comparable growth in the first quarter, comparable growth then improved to 4.8% in the second, adding up to 3.2% over the first two quarters of the year. In the second quarter in particular, we saw improvements across all of the sub-regions, with trading picking up especially in Southern Europe with stronger sunglass sales. Moving to profitability, adjusted EBITDA in the other Europe segment increased by 14.7%. However, the adjusted EBITDA margin decreased by 70 basis points to 14.1% in the first half. This because of the margin dilutive effect of the Randazzo acquisition in Italy, of which the effects were mainly felt in the first quarter. In the second quarter, the adjusted EBITDA performance improved with growth of 25.1% and underlying organic growth of 13.3%. As a result, the adjusted EBITDA margin increased by 35 basis points to 15.4%. And now, moving on to the Latin America and Asian segment on slide 14. There, half-year revenue increased by more than 50% at constant exchange rates, or 11.2% organically, with strong growth in Chile, Colombia, and Mexico. Underlying comparable growth came in at 7.1%. And in the second quarter, revenue grew by more than 60% at constant exchange rates, mostly due to the acquisitions, but also organic growth was strong at 10.6%, and comparable growth during the quarter was 5.3%. Adjusted EBITDA more than tripled to 7 million euro, and the adjusted EBITDA margin increased to 3.7%. In the second quarter, this adjusted EBITDA margin progressed to a full 5%. We are satisfied with the margin development in the Latin and Asia segment, which is in accordance with our strategy. Let me show you how we achieved this in slide 15. So, turning to the next slide. We have taken a number of initiatives in Latin America and Asia that resulted in margin progression. First of all, the increasing size of the business is starting to give us economies of scale, allowing us to better leverage our operating expenses. We have also successfully integrated the newly acquired business in China, Colombia, Peru, and Turkey. Needless to say that the integration costs were impacting our margins during Q4 2014. We have also taken steps to optimize our store network in Brazil, where we closed a number of less profitable stores. Brazil is a complex retail market, and we are adapting our organization and store footprints to optimize our business. Finally, we are also implementing our global capabilities in Latin and Asia and are increasingly benefiting from supply chain and procurement synergy, I should say. And now, back to the total company. On slide 16, you can see our track record of adjusted EBITDA growth and margin expansion. During the first half of 2015, we continued to increase both adjusted EBITDA and the adjusted EBITDA margin. This despite the diluting effect of acquisition. When excluding acquisitions, the adjusted EBITDA margin would have increased by 76 basis points to 16.8%. The dilution effect was considerably lower in the second quarter as integration costs were mostly incurred in the early quarters, and our integration initiatives started to deliver efficiencies and take hold. Turning to slide 17, you can see how this translates into cash flow generation. We achieved a robust cash flow generation in the first half of 2015, with cash flow from operating activities increasing from 149 million euros to 188 million, which is an increase of 27%, ahead of both revenue and adjusted EBITDA. Free cash flow reached 124 million compared to 90 million in the first half of 2014. And capital expenditure not related to acquisitions was 64 million euros, or 4% of revenue in the first half of this year. The majority of capital expenditure was directed towards store openings, maintenance, and refurbishments. Store-related capital expenditures itself decreased by 3 million euros to 44 million in the first half of 2015 compared to the previous year, mainly due to a different timing of investments and optimized store designs. Non-store capital expenditure increased by 8 million euros in the half year compared to the same period in 2014. This increase is mainly driven by investments into the enabling IT systems, which Theo covered earlier. Net debt decreased to 863 million euros at the end of June 2015 from 922 million at the year end 2014. This includes, of course, the acquisition of 50 million euros of treasury shares at the initial public offering. The 12-month rolling net debt EBITDA ratio then decreased to 1.8 times from 2.1 times at year-end 2014. Finally, on slide 18, I would like to remind you again of our medium-term financial objectives. We are expecting to deliver annual revenue growth of at least 5% at constant exchange rates. This includes small bolt-on acquisitions, but excludes larger size deals such as Randazzo in Italy, which we closed late in December 2014. We are also expecting annual adjusted EBITDA growth in the high single digits, this also at constant exchange rates. In terms of the financial structure, we are targeting a net debt EBITDA ratio of maximum 2 times. This is comfortably below our covenant of 3.25 times. And as previously shown, our current net debt EBITDA ratio has decreased to 1.8. We expect our strong cash flow generation to continue to enable us to make further acquisitions without significantly altering our capital structure, and this while paying a dividend. As previously communicated again, our supervisory board has approved an interim dividend of 0.14 eurocents per share. The shares will trade ex-coupon as of 3rd of September 2015, and dividends will be payable as from 8th of September 2015. The date of record will be 4th September 2015. The remainder of the dividend over the financial year 2015 will be determined at the general meeting in 2016, and therefore paid in May 2016. Beyond 2016, we intend to pay an ordinary dividend annually in line with our medium to long-term financial performance and expect to increase the dividend per share over time. As a result of this policy, we are targeting a dividend payout ratio of 25 to 50%. And with this, I would like to ask our moderator, Mariam, to open the Q&A session. Please, Mariam.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure the mute button on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing a star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for just a moment to allow everyone to signal for questions. We'll take the first question from Karel Zotti from Rabobank. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, all. Three questions, please. The first one is with regard to Randazzo. Can you provide an update how the integration is going and whether you've already made decisions with regard to the positioning and the banner of this company? The second question is on add-on deals in current market. I understand there have been little add-on deals here, but given the is that still required given increased confidence, say, on expansion of stores without doing add-on deals, or are you still looking to do in-market acquisitions? And then the third question is, can you provide more color on the actions you're taking in Brazil? Are you now focusing more on the southeastern part of the country, or are you still looking to build a more countrywide presence? Thank you.
Yes, thank you for your questions. I'll take them by order. Gandazzo, the acquisition we closed last year, was a very complementary acquisition in the Italian market. Our previous presence under Avanzi was more in the northern part of the country, whereas Gandazzo, under the banner of Optissimo, is present more in the southern part of the country. So this gives us a very nice national coverage in Italy and also leads us to the market-leading position. In terms of positioning, these two banners were already similar, again, positioned in where we like to position ourselves in the mass market of the countries. So complementary positioning. The brand awareness of these banners was mostly in their area, so the north as respectively to the south. We're now currently testing pretty progress in that process on how to banner these these two different companies or previously different banners. You will see that in the communication that's ongoing in Italy since the beginning of the year, also on television, that there's already a co-bannering of these two brands. So we will integrate them to one banner. Which one that will be is currently being assessed and is driven by the results of the market research and the customer response. Your second question on the necessity of add-on deals. Optical retail is still highly fragmented in all markets, and that includes also what we would consider mature markets of Western Europe. Therefore, the opportunity of growth through add-on acquisitions is still high. We have a very strong track record in identifying these opportunities, integrating them into the lead banners in the countries, and we expect that to continue next to the other growth levers as own network expansion optimization. So it's been a very strong additional driver of growth, and we expect that to stay that way. Your question on Brazil. Brazil is obviously very, very large country with, I would say, also clearly distinctive markets within Brazil. Our presence today is around Sao Paulo, which is the largest market in Brazil, also due to population and purchasing power, and in the northeast of the country around Salvador and Recife. So we are present in these two big markets within Brazil. We expect to further grow our presence in those markets in an operational model that is aligned well with the Brazilian specifics, and then, of course, also in the future expand to other regions of Brazil. But it's definitely a cluster approach as the Brazilian market is an inhomogeneous market and is more defined by distinct single marketplaces rather than one big identical Brazil.
Thank you.
We'll now take the next question from Marco Gulpers from ING.
Yes, good morning, all. A couple of follow-up questions from me. First, also on the Latin America and the Asia region, can you provide us what the current number of stores are indeed in Brazil, and how many have you actually closed in the year? The second question is more related to this region is, could you provide an update on China and Turkey as well? What are your steps taken there? Then switching to the G4 region, of course the tech centers have been running to speed, so to speak. Could you perhaps quantify what the effect is so far during the year of you running these centers at the moment and what we could still expect in the second half of the year? My third question is more related to the market growth in your region. You've done a stellar performance again in the second quarter. Could you benchmark that versus some of your major markets and what you're seeing basically the market growth is at the moment? and how you stack up to that market growth and what your expectations are for the second half of the year. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for your questions. I'll cover your first two, and then we'll ask Paolo to address the other two. Latin and Asia, the current current status of numbers of stores and what's going on in Brazil. We're expanding the store base very strongly in these markets. If you look at Brazil, and Paolo mentioned that we are optimizing the network there and have also seen some store closures, the store closures in Brazil have been under 20. So it's not that we're closing huge numbers. We're optimizing the store network in terms of finding the locations that fit best to our positioning in the mass market, looking at the specific Brazilian approach. So we expect also there, again, to see a net growth of stores ongoing. We have very strong growth in other markets in Latin America. We've given the Mexican example. We have integrated the acquisition of Colombia, which has increased the number of stores very strongly there. We're currently integrating the business in Peru to align it with the overall Grand Vision business and also bring the global capabilities that we've mentioned to play in those markets. So we expect ongoing very strong expansion in these markets. We've also mentioned earlier that our resilience against economic cycles is much lower in general in this business. So we feel that there's ample opportunity also against the backlight of ongoing discussions of slowdowns in emerging economies for growth of our business segment. So we do not feel that that is restraining our growth. China and Turkey, we're very satisfied with the developments we're seeing there. Our Turkish business, again, we're the market leader in Turkey, is developing along with our expectations. In China, which was more or less a new market entry last year, we have been testing and adapting, again, our core commercial proposition to the Chinese consumer, and also there we're satisfied with the results and expect reasonable growth of the store network going forward.
Yeah, as for the tech centers in Europe, yeah, they are. Let's say the rollout is progressing as expected. Of course, it will take several years to have 100% coverage, because it's not only about having the tech centers ready, but it's also to onboard store by store, and therefore adapt the store staffing and adapt the store costs to it. But it's progressing as expected. So we are happy with the situation. Then, in terms of the comparison between comparable growth and market growth, our comparable growth is in general beating, of course, market growth as in the previous quarters. So nothing much new there. We have just received some market growth numbers, and this has been restated. But in general, of course, we continue to see the market growths that we are expecting, and that previously mentioned and published in our publication.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Robert Vos from ABN AMRO.
Yes, hi, good morning. I have three questions, please. On the EBITDA dilution from acquisitions, can you say anything on that for the second half? Will it be less than the 70 basis points mentioned in the first half? The second question, is there a specific reason why you reported a bit of a deceleration of comparable growth in Latin America and Asia in the second quarter compared with Q1? If I recall correctly, the base was actually a bit easier in the second quarter of this year versus Q1. And my third question, it seems that your corporate costs were a bit higher in the second quarter, 10 million versus 7 million in Q1. Is there a specific explanation for this, and what is a good number to pencil in going forward? Thank you.
So on the EBITDA dilution from acquisitions, yeah, we expect further progress because that's precisely, our strategy in terms of bolt-on or new market entries, to of course improve the profitability of those businesses. So that should come along the flow. And then in terms of deceleration, everything is relative, of course. We're still very happy with the comparable growth that we're getting in Latin America and Asia. I mentioned some very strong growths in certain countries, but in the second quarter in particular, we saw some deceleration in Russia. This has not impacted our profitability in Russia, by the way, because we have been able to execute our cost restructuring programs and our lease renegotiations accordingly. But yes, we have seen, to a degree, deceleration in Russia and Brazil, obviously maybe also linked to some economic circumstances to which even optical retailers sometimes is not always immune to, but we overall are satisfied with the growth in that segment. And then in terms of corporate costs, maybe you're mentioning the increase in general administrative costs there. In fact, in that number, we have a number of accelerated amortization of intangibles linked to these acquisitions in Q4 of last year. Also, a product brand impairment in Brazil. When you exclude those one-offs, in fact, our overheads real administrative costs are declining as a percent of revenue, as they should.
Okay, thank you.
We'll now take the next question from Matthew Webb from JP Morgan.
Yeah, hi, thanks for taking the question. I just wanted to ask whether the same aggressive commercial policies that you've pursued in the first half in Germany and Austria will continue into the second half, and also whether you could possibly just remind us when those programs started, just to help us to think about what the H2 outlook might be, including the comp effect. Thanks.
Yes, Matthew, thank you for that question. If you look at commercial campaignings, first of all, of course, our commercial positioning and the increased leverage of the global capabilities will continue, of course, also in Germany. We have a very strong history of developing and executing commercial campaigns, of course, to the appeal of our customers. Timing, content, and sequence of these, of course, change, and that's by intention. Therefore, we expect what you call aggressive campaigns to continue, because our vision is, of course, to offer high-quality eye care at affordable prices to more and more people around the world. And as that is not the case yet everywhere, it's not available everywhere to our customers, we have set our goal to change that. And therefore, our campaigns are generally designed to raise the attention and make this eye care accessible. So we're achieving that objective. We've achieved it especially well in Germany and Austria last year, this year, and we expect to continue these campaigns, not only in Germany, but of course broadly throughout our organization. And as we're growing market share and volumes, and also increasing our margin due to operational leverages and the sourcing capabilities, we feel very comfortable continuing on that course.
So, sorry, if I can just follow up. Am I right in thinking that they have been particularly aggressive in the first half, or is that a misunderstanding on my part? Is it really just, you know, a continuation of your established approach?
It is a continuation of the established approach. So if you compare specifically the content of the campaigns, they are not necessarily different than what you would have seen in other countries, in Germany, at other places. So it's a continuation.
We don't find them aggressive. We find them successful, and that is more related to the commercial execution and the effectiveness of that commercial execution. That's the reason why they are successful.
That's very clear. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Julian Easthope from Barclays.
Hi, morning everyone. I've also got three questions, if I may. The first one, really coming back to like-for-likes. You've always been cautious on your like-for-likes and the progress you've made over the last few quarters. Saying that there were reasons for that happening that were kind of one-off. Do I notice a different tone this time round? Because you're explaining that this appears to be sort of more sustainable, and therefore mid-single-digit growth is the new normal moving forward. The second question comes to sunglasses. You've talked a couple of places about sunglass sales. I just wondered, as it's materially increased as a percentage of the total sales. And lastly, in terms of France, I think there's also been lots of comments about the regulatory changes, and it was one of the weak markets. Do you think of that was an impact in there, or was it other factors? Thank you.
Yes, thank you for those questions, Julian. Looking at the comparable growth that you've mentioned, the comparable growth is, of course, a result of our commercial propositions, which are truly empowered then by the capabilities, very much also by our product assortments, exclusive brand developments, and so forth. And as we've tried to explain, there's a reason why they've accelerated now over the last periods, as we've mentioned, that we have completed the what we would call resetting process of 2012 and 13 to ensure that all our brands are aligned on this commercial proposition, because as we mentioned, optical retail is very similar across the world. So that's a process that has been concluded. Of course, we're now also looking at very strong or increasingly strong previous year comparators. So we expect to see further comparable growth. That is one of our strategic high priorities for all the obvious reasons. So that is a very, very strong focus of our business to ensure that we show comparable growth through our store network. We expect that to be robust. We would not make a forward-looking statement on the level to expect on those numbers. Sunglass sales, you'll recall from the other documentation that in general, sunglass, specifically sunglass with optical features, is very strongly underpenetrated throughout the world. Just recalling the numbers that roughly 50% of the population needs eyesight correction, remind ourselves of the number that only 17% of these actually have sunglasses with prescription glasses. So there's a very big opportunity, and we had also seen that Grand Vision in general has under-indexed or is under-indexed in sunglasses. We have made a very strong, given a very strong focus on our sunglass business with all the measures taken. We see good, strong growth in sunglasses, which I would say is slightly above the average of the others, which is not now significantly changing, but is, of course, achieving the objective of reducing the under-penetration of our sun business, and we expect that to continue. And the last one, France, I'll hand that over to Paolo.
Yes, so the performance of the French business, which was under average versus the segment in the first half, is not linked to any changes in regulatory environment. The changes in regulatory environment in France have been talked about for decades. Most recently, in the last quarter, there were new limits imposed in terms of reimbursement schemes. But we, as you know, I think we previously mentioned this, our banners operate well below those limits in any case. And we actually welcome the total deregulation of the French market, because then the true competitiveness will show, and we'll be able to serve more customers with affordable eye care, and not, let's say, have those customers being diverted to heavily subsidized retail operators. So that's why we welcome the deregulation. But once again, this has not impacted the French business performance in the first half. This is more linked to timing of campaigns.
Okay, thank you. Actually, is it possible to just have one point of clarification for the models? So were you, on terms of corporate costs for the second half, is it going to be more normalized at Q1 levels rather than Q2 levels because of the exceptionals in Q2?
To a certain extent, the accelerated amortization of the intangibles due to these acquisitions will continue. But once again, we are seeing, because we're acting on it, a continued reduction of our real underlying overheads or real underlying administrative costs. So, that's all I can say.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
The next question comes from Paul Rossington from HSBC.
Good morning, gents.
Am I on?
Good morning.
Okay. Hi, sorry. A lot of my questions have been asked. I have a couple of extras, though. Can you say, with reference to CapEx, non-acquisition CapEx being around 4% of sales, is that a good benchmark to use going forward for this year and for outer years? So obviously excluding acquisitions, but just looking at non-acquisition CapEx.
Well, the 4% is indeed the average of what we are expecting. It can be lower or slightly higher depending on certain programs, but it's not a bad benchmark.
Okay, thank you. And that would include the ongoing rollout of your new IT systems for the foreseeable future as well? There's no uplift required for that project?
Well, yes. I mean, the 4% is a good benchmark. Yeah. So,
by definition, yes. Thank you. And also, on the point of the technology centers in Europe, could you just, I'm not sure if I caught what level of capacity they're currently running at. I know it's going to take some time to get to full capacity, but what capacity are they currently running at, please?
The capacity, if we look at the way these tech centers are built, is that we have very strongly modularized them. So at this point, it would be running that. So we're trying to install as much capacity as we need, so we don't lead with CAPEX too strong, and then we can expand them very flexibly, modularly as we put additional volume into them. So they're not utilized strongly at this point, but they still have strong expansion opportunity. I would say that they're now with installed capacity running maybe at 60-70% of their capacity. Whereas a lot of the cost is, of course, variable cost.
Got it. Thank you. Lastly, is it fair to assume or suggest that actually where have you seen better sunglass revenue performance? To some extent, that is a more seasonal part of the business. You know, we have seen better weather across Europe this year than last year. Is that reflected in the numbers in the short term as well on the sunglass performance?
Yes, I mean, sunglasses have a weather impact, very much, for instance, like ice cream. So, yes, I mean, obviously, weather will have an impact on sunglass sales.
Okay, thank you very much.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. We'll now take the next question from Craig Abbott from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Two remaining questions from my side. First of all, just getting back to the topic of France, you mentioned that you felt slowdown in Q2 was not related to the regulatory changes, but more linked to campaigns, and that the limits imposed in Q2 would more play into your cards. And I just wondered if you have some campaigns now being rolled out in Q3 to take advantage of this situation, the fact that your price point is below the average, as the French consumers, I would presume, are becoming a bit more price sensitive, and just kind of give us a feel. You said toward the end of Q2 you were seeing your sales in France improve a bit, in part due to sunglass sales, which again may have been seasonal, but I just wonder if you kind of give us a feel. I know you're not going to give us numbers, but how you see that developing in the second half. And secondly, Theo, you mentioned very briefly in your presentation, we were talking about the ERP investments. You mentioned that you continue to invest also in your omnichannel offering and in terms of providing a more standardized approach. I just wondered where you stand there in terms of rolling out your omnichannel offering across your different key banners. And just to confirm, you still run a very strict policy of providing the customer a lot of online services, but purchases are still to be made only in store. Is that correct? Beyond, say, renewals of contact lenses? Yeah, those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you for those questions. I'll start with your second one and then hand the one on the second question on the French situation back to Paolo. Omnichannel. Omnichannel is, of course, our very strong belief in general for optical retail. Because we believe that it provides the best service to our customers, be it in-store, out-of-store, on the go, wherever. So it's an integrated retail approach as opposed to pure play or multi-channel approach. If you look at where are we with that, it's in ongoing development. We are successfully testing very, very integrated systems, which of course need the adequate IT support, an IT platform. I mentioned earlier that's also why I mentioned it in the context of our IT platform, that these things are being developed and are actually step by step are being executed. We expect to see the rollout of an omnichannel platform as one of the global capabilities I've mentioned within our sort of multidimensional, multi-country capability roadmap over the next years throughout all our banners, because this is something that is relevant in all countries, of course, as it is driven by consumer expectations and changing behavior in a retail environment. In terms of selling online, at this point in time, you could also already acquire through our website sunglasses, you could already acquire contact lenses, you could manage contact lens subscription models. So there is a richness of functionality that is today available in various of our countries, in various of our Fusil One websites. The objective is, of course, to harmonize this, to, again, leverage a platform and make this available internationally rather than one-by-one developments. The purchase of optical retail, of optical equipment online, is, I would say, at this point, very much, or the purchase in general of optical equipment, hinges very much also on the customer service element of eye testing and fitting, which has to be, at this point, still has to be done physically. Maybe there'll be a solution in the future to do that remotely, which, of course, we're always very closely looking at, and I would say also potentially working on designing. But at this point, we need an integrated approach. So we will, and we will not compromise the quality of what we're serving to our customers. So the integration, the integration of being able to do that in a physical store network, while at the same time being able to provide great service in terms of pre-selection, in terms of information, in terms of replenishment and the likes through other media, is what we're working on. So we have a differentiated approach to specific elements in the customer journey from a customer perspective and not from a channel perspective. And that's why, again, to sum up, we believe in the omnichannel approach, which we're developing and are in early stages of implementation already also. But this will be a moving target. This will continuously grow and develop over the next years, of course, as technology becomes available, as consumer behavior changes, and we will, of course, feel ourselves as leading the edge in terms of omnichannel capabilities.
Yes, and as for your first question regarding the forensic, there's been a lot of hype around these changes in regulation, the limits that are being imposed on the reimbursement levels. But it's a lot of hype. What these new limits have done is essentially stop what I would call a preposterous pricing level, but they have not stopped the very, very expensive pricing levels. So therefore, we are not seeing, as I said earlier, but we do not expect also going forward for this year, changes in consumer behavior linked to that, which means that our commercial campaigns will continue to be the commercial campaigns that we have done and continue to do effectively, which in essence continue to highlight the affordability of our high-quality eye care and that in France. But again, we don't expect any consumer behavior changes in the year to come.
Okay. Thank you.
The next question comes from Graham Renwick from Exane. Please go ahead.
Good morning, all. Just a couple of quick questions for myself, please. Firstly, on currency, how are you thinking about the devaluation of currencies in emerging markets? And is this impacting your decision on where you'll focus on targeting growth between LATAM, Asia, and Europe? And secondly, just on your new global ERP system, which went live in the last few months, are there any early indications of cost efficiencies feeding into the numbers, particularly in the markets where it's been deployed, or is there a lag before you expect to see any material benefits coming through? Thank you.
Thank you. In, ter- terms of the global ERP, I mean, we're just live. You know, staff in the different operating companies is happy with the operations and the effectiveness of the system. Obviously, we will be seeing synergies coming from that. It's a little bit too early. It's been a couple of months. But we are, of course, working on delivering those benefits, not only because of the cost reductions, but more importantly, linked to the higher effectiveness, the faster reactivity of the businesses, and, of course, the better deployment and the enabling deployment of our global capabilities, particularly in the supply chain area. But also, I have to say, in terms of assortment and being able to always have the best sellers and no longer the bad stuff that we need to then sell through discounts. So we expect improvements in all areas of the P&L, including the revenue line. And then on the first question, which was about
currency.
The currency, yes, the currency exposure. We are in business for the long term. So, you know, these short-term currency fluctuations are there, but we are deploying our strategy, particularly in terms of regional deployments, for the long term. Therefore, that is not changing our perspectives, and that is not changing our ambition in that area. And I should say also that for now, unfortunately still for the moment, we have a low exposure. Of course, we want to have a much bigger exposure in the future because we want to expand rapidly in those emerging and fast-growing markets. But for now, low exposure, and yes, no change to our strategy.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
We'll now take the next question from Sander van Oort from Kempen.
Hi, good morning. Sander van Oort, Kempen. Thank you for taking my questions. Three questions, if I may. First of all, on the ERP implementation. I was wondering, is it just now two systems running separately, or is it already causing double running costs to go out of the cost structure as we speak? And maybe you can also elaborate on your launch in new countries, let's say in the second half of the year. Should we take the four countries you implemented it in the first half as a run rate going forward, or is there, can we expect an acceleration in the quarters to come? Secondly, I was wondering whether you can update us on the growth of your unique brands versus your external brands. Is there any difference visible? And thirdly, I was wondering on the operational leverage in Asia and Latin America, to what extent is comparable to G4 and other Europe, or should we take into account a significant different cost structure to assess the operational leverage? Thank you.
So, Paolo here, I will take your first question and then Theo will take the second one. We call it a global ERP. It is a single box ERP. It's not two boxes. It's a single instance, and it is operating across all these opcos. That's the purpose of actually building the system like that. And then in terms of next countries, we are rolling it out across the remainder of the G4 next year. We believe that the pace of rollout is appropriate. It's fast, but it's appropriate because we want to, of course, deliver the synergies and the effectiveness the fastest possible way. Theo?
Looking at the question of our own exclusive brands, again, you know, I'll anchor this on our overall vision to provide high-quality, affordable eye care in our mass markets. So we are very much looking at doing that in the very best and most efficient way for a customer perspective, and exclusive brands serve that purpose extremely well in all of our categories. We see and are looking at a further expansion of exclusive brand shares to what we feel is appropriate, and that might differ slightly country by country by specific customer behavior and demands, but we see in general and expect generally an increasing share. But even more importantly, we see an ongoing improving quality of these products, both from a product quality, technical quality, as well as from a design quality. So we feel it's getting more and more attractive, giving more and more attractive options to customers to really have access to high-quality, well-designed, fashionable, innovative product at a very affordable prices. So it has been and will remain a very strong focus point of our offering towards our customer in line with our strategy.
Yes, and then on the, your third and last question in terms of the operating leverage in Latin America and Asia, we aim for the same level of store contribution in any region. So we want to achieve a minimum of 20% store contribution at all stores that we operate, regardless whether they are in Latin America, Asia, Europe, or anywhere else. Within that, of course, that region is in a earlier development phase, and therefore we have higher administrative and support costs in the region than in as a relative on a relative basis to revenue than in the G4, for instance. Obviously, we will continue to increase the operational leverage in the regions. That's the purpose of the faster growth there and the fast expansion. And in terms of margin targets for that segment, given the growth opportunity that we have in the region, we will continue to grow as aggressively as we possibly can in order to accompany and even beat the market growth and be there when those markets are really, really big. That means that, therefore, enhancing profitability, for instance, to the level of the G4 is not our priority. Our priority there is growth, but of course, as you've seen, for instance, in the past half year, we will continue to aim for additional profitability, obviously.
Okay, thank you.
We'll take our last question from Paul Rossington from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hello again. One more follow-up. You mentioned that you've got some new data on the optical market. I was just wondering, you say the growth are broadly in line with what you expected, but have you seen any changes in the repurchase cycles at all in any markets?
That's a simple answer, no.
Thank you.
We've not seen any changes in the repurchase cycles. To remind us, repurchase cycles are actually pretty long. In optical retail in general, compared to other industries. So, of course, also what we're attempting always to do is to, again, the more affordable offers to also give the customers an opportunity to shorten these purchase cycles. But no, we have not seen any changes from a market perspective.
And how do you, what strategy do you adopt to the cost of the eye test to help drive more frequent visits? In that regard, do you promote on the eye test costs, you know, half price eye tests or free eye tests at all?
That is a difficult and a question to answer in a general perspective, because the eye test markets are very, very different by markets, also depending on the underlying possibilities. If you look at the UK, for example, where you have optometry and the optical retail stores in general take a very strong level and contribution to eye testing, we do a very, very strong communication on eye testing, as that is a very strong customer-relevant communication element and a very relevant service that is provided by the optical retail stores there. In other countries, for example, Brazil, we're not even allowed to do eye tests in stores. So it differs very strongly. So it's a very differentiated approach we take based on the relevance in the specific market and the way that optical retailers contribute to that. But of course, it is a very strong element of what we do in optical retail. Optical retail is not only the merchandising of product; it is an integrated service process. It's selecting the right product. It's producing the right product. So we include that very strongly, of course, in our communication, because we also believe that we have opportunity to differentiate on that in terms of quality of the eye tests we provide.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Yes, and if I understand correctly, I will at that point hand it back to the operator for the close of the call. I would like to thank all of you for participating in this morning's call and the interest that you've shown in Grand Vision, and we hope we've been able to answer your questions sufficiently. Thank you very much, and looking forward to speaking here and receiving you in the near future.
Thank you.